This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
There's this myth that black people did not resist until Watts or until the Black Panther Party. It's just not true.
The Oglala Nation is at a crossroads that can change the course of history for Indian people all across the nation.
The other half of the women's liberation movement is the boys. And that man who is strong enough to be Geno, that is a new man.
The Stonewall Bar to me is a terrible place where something great happened.
For 45 years, KBOO has let the sun shine in across Cascadia's airwaves. Join us every month in 2013 for a new treasure from the KBOO archives.
This is Tune In, Turn On, Remember, 45 years of great KBOO community radio. This is the fourth of our year-long series, and this show is going to focus on two people, the late George Page and the impact he left on programming for KBOO throughout the years he was here. And then we're going to talk to longtime programmer Shahid Hamid. Both these gentlemen had one thing in common. They loved the blues.
The meanest things he could say would thrill you through and through. And there wasn't nothing too dirty for that man to do. He'd treat you nice and kindly when you're heart in hand. He'd treat you nice and kindly when you're heart in hand. Then he'd get so cruel, that man you just could not stand. Lord, I really don't think no man's love can last. Lord, I don't think no man's treat you like a thing of the past. There's 19 men living in my neighborhood. There's 19 men living in my neighborhood. 18 of them are fools, and the one ain't no doggone.
Here you go, starting off the show with the blues, the one thing that both these gentlemen had in common, George Page and Shahid Hamid. I think I was only 3 years old at the time, Shahid. You believe that, don't you?
Yeah, I certainly do, because I wasn't much older myself. So,
yeah, we were just little kids at the time. All right, you walked in the door in 1980. What prompted you to want to get involved with KBOO?
Well, what prompted me was of a spiritual nature. My community putting on a broadcast and needed someone to come down and coordinate it. My community asked me if I would be interested in coming down to work on the program. And, of course, being from the East Coast and being from New York and knowing how important radio and communication is, I agreed to come down.
Define your community.
Now, I was with the and still am with the Muslim community, And we had a program called Imam WD, Muhammad Speaks. And I came down to coordinate that because we would get tapes from our headquarters in Chicago, and we had to take out the commercial aspect, any commercial references on the tapes. We had to edit those out before we could air them on cable. And that's basically what I did.
How long did that program run on the air?
Well, it ran until I was here from 1980 to 1988. In 1988, I had to go back east because I had some illness in the family. My mother was ill, and I had to go back and kind of put my time in terms of helping around the house and so forth. And then the program went through a somewhat transition, and the name was changed. A name was changed to an Islamic point of view, and it's still on to this day.
It still airs today.
It still airs to this day, yeah.
Sure, sure. Now, give us a picture or an idea of, was the program religious in nature, or was it religious/political? What was the format like?
Well, it was religious/political because Islam doesn't really kind of separate the two. And so that was the makeup of the program, particularly back in those days, because we was coming out of a one transition from the Nation of Islam to the World Community of Islam. And this was led by Imam W. Dean Muhammad, the son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And he kind of emphasized a worldview, whereas his father emphasized a more of a nationalistic view of the religion.
Is this during the period of time when Malcolm X was in prominence? And I'm asking more from ignorance mm-hmm. than anything else. Farrakhan, who were some of the national key figures during that period of time?
Well, during that period of time, Malcolm had been assassinated already. During that period of time, and his the son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was chosen to succeed his father after his father's death in 1975, and so from the time when I came, which was 1980. Came to Oregon and helped with the broadcast. His son was the leader of the community, although the community was going through a transitional split about the time when Minister Farrakhan assumed the leadership of the Nation of Islam, which the Imam W.D. Muhammad, the son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, had. Transition us from the Nation of Islam and left the name behind. But Farrakhan came and picked it up again, and that's what he's still doing today.
Okay, here's a question for you. And I've thought about this for a while, and I can't think of any better way to ask it than this. Mm-hmm. If there was one particular thing about Islam that the average person on the street does not know, what do you think that would be?
Well, I think probably that we're not as militant as the media portrays us to be. Speaking about the world community of Islam, we have our ups and downs as every religion these days does. But I think that we are primarily a peaceful people. We're primarily the religion, the name Islam means peace in Arabic, in the Arabic language, the language in which the Quran was revealed. So I think that, to me, I think that that's one of the chief things that many people don't know, and maybe assume that we're not as peaceful as the media portrays.
Now, doesn't the word Shaheed mean warrior?
It means it has a number of meanings. It means warrior, but and it means witness as well.
Okay.
So it means martyr. You might be referring to that. That's one of the names of a martyr in Islam, but it talks about warrior, being a warrior for righteousness. a warrior, and it emphasizes that the battle begins with self, to conquer those things within us, like greed, envy, jealousy, things of that nature, and to purify ourselves, and that's a battle. But that's where the first battle in the highest, that's the highest jihad. Jihad means a warrior as well, or a holy war. It's been interpreted that way. And the holiest of wars is the war within self, the war to conquer those things in those nafs, they're called in Arabic, those desires that are not in accord with what God intended for the human being.
Very good. Now, we're gonna move away from here. 1988, you were here. You were helping to oversee the program. You went back east for a period of time. When you came back, did you get re-involved with KABU again?
Absolutely. That was my first stop after after I dropped my bags off at home. I came right back to KABU.
Okay. You know? Yeah. What did you do when you returned?
Well, I coordinated the program, began to coordinate and help coordinate the program again, and also did some other programming, you know, because cable really revolves around contributions made in a variety of ways, not simply programming, but I, at one point of time, I served on the board of directors. In fact, I was the president of the board of directors for a time. I've served on the programming committee. Was a president of the program committee for a time, and also just worked on developing and doing public affairs programming and helping with public affairs programming, because that's a sensitive area for us and an area that I really enjoy as well.
Now, you're currently hosting two programs,
mm-hmm.
Blues. And it takes blues and more,
mm-hmm.
and it takes a village.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Tune In, Turn On, Remember, 45 years of great KABU community radio. My guest is Shahid Hamid, and we're talking about his experiences as being an old-timer here at KABU. And I say old-timer in, you're much younger than me. So, all right. You're currently hosting Blues and More,
mm-hmm.
and It Takes a Village. Let's talk about those two shows. First, Blues and More. Fill us in. When does it air, and what's the genre? I mean, besides blues, I mean,
right,
you know, fill
right.
it in.
Well, the program comes on every other Saturday. I rotate with Tom Wendt, and I want to say from the outset, I don't pretend to be a blues expert or expert in blues or a connoisseur in that sense. Tom has way more knowledge than I have. About blues, but it was just a way for me to share some of my philosophy with respect to blues, that blues is deeper than just the genres that we are really more familiar with like Texas blues, Southern blues, Delta blues. There's a lot of blues out there.
Your favorite, is it the more contemporary new blues sound, or do you like to go back in time?
Both actually, and that's one of the things I strive to do is connect one with the other, you know, because the, you know, it's, they're not mutually exclusive in that sense. I really work at playing artists like Ray Charles, for example, who's really is you can't almost categorize him. Aretha Franklin, for example, she's another blues artist that many people are not really aware of, and so I try to, but I tend to lean more toward the more contemporary blues aspect. But you got people like Curtis Delgado, you got and a host of others. Stevie Ray Vaughan, of course, made a significant contribution to blues. Eric Clapton, you know, so
Johnny Lang,
yeah. See, you know the stuff. I don't know. I'm still learning, but I used to do more of the soul, rhythm and blues programming. I've done that for many years here. A program called The Essence of Soul, which I inherited from J.W. Friday and Ken Berry. So when KABU decided to change its format, I had to do something. So I said, I'll just do blues because I know blues was open, and I can still kind of mix my rhythm and blues in there as well.
Is there a significant difference between soul music and blues?
Not really a significant, I don't think so. And again, as I mentioned, that's one of the things I try to connect with, or one of the things I try to demonstrate, you know, with my programming, that there's not a, because rhythm, blues is at the base, is at the root of rhythm and blues and soul to some degree. You have to kind of listen to the music, and because it's about a feeling, it's about a description, it's about a lot of people, you know, would tell you that soul, for example, with a lot of artists was rapping long before rap became popular. You know, Louis Armstrong and Cab Calloway and you know, a host of musicians.
By the way, before I forget, remind me when we get off air, because the story is way too long for this.
Okay.
I've got a Cab Calloway story for you.
Okay, great.
It's really great. Okay, what we're going to do right now, you mentioned Ray Charles a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an old Ray Charles song we're going to play right now, and it might be back from a time that might be familiar for you. So
okay.
We'll be right back after this Ray Charles song.
Okay.
Tell me, honey, what are you gonna do? Tell me, baby, please tell me, what have I done? Block. You were beat and ragged, had the mob. Tell me, babe, please, please tell me, what have I done?
There you go. That's Ray Charles, of course, from a couple of, well, maybe a couple of decades ago or more. This is Tune In, Turn On, Remember. I'm having so much fun, I can't believe it. Now, you also do a show, Shahid, called It Takes a Village. When does that air?
That airs once a month, the first Friday of every month from 11 until 11:30. It's only a half an hour show.
And tell us about what the show encompasses.
Well, one of the things that I believe as a Muslim, but not only as a Muslim, but as a citizen in this city, in this community, is that we have to take it, we have to try to work together. And I think that's the principal purpose behind this philosophy of it takes a village. It takes all of us to make this city works. It takes all of us to make the African-American community come up from its problems or the problems that we have to address. It takes all of us to do that. So that's my primary philosophy, and I try to focus on people who are involved with working with gangs, as opposed as well as healthcare, as well as mental health, and anything that makes the community work. That's the Urban League, Muslims in the city, and trying to get them involved,
and your neighbor next door,
and my neighbor next door. Who's my neighbor next door? Yeah, my next door. Like, say, who's your neighbor? You know.
So, well, yeah. How many times do we go through life never knowing who our neighbors are?
Who our neighbors are? Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So, you interview folks. Mm-hmm. You do books, I imagine. Interview authors.
I was fortunate enough to have John Carlos come through. I don't know, many of your listeners may be familiar with him. He was one of the principal athletes at 1968 Olympics that raised a black fist in the air and stuff. And it's Tommy Smith and John Carlos. He came through. We had a wonderful interview with him. Just a host of community members, as well, educators, people just involved with the community from many, many aspects. I was just had a young lady on from Coffee Creek. She's involved with this program. She's dealing with family preservation because I tend to program to a lot of the African Americans who are incarcerated, and being aware of that and making a contribution in that area. And she does has a family preservation program that addresses women who are incarcerated and trying to hook them up with their kids and bring their kids down to Coffee Creek Prison once a month and things like that. When I see any kind of people working together in the community to make the community better, I try to bring an interview on and deal with it.
Okay, you see all kinds of things going on working with young people on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look back to the time when you arrived in Portland in 1980, and here we are in 2013 right now, do you think things on the whole have improved for people?
You know, that's a very difficult question because, you know, how do you gauge improvement? How do you rate that? The black community is more dispersed now than obviously when I came in 1980. In 1980, Northeast Portland was predominantly African American. Now, due to gentrification and a lot of other issues, that's no longer the case. The whole population of incarceration, the ratio of African Americans incarcerated with those of other people there's a disparity there, the lack of health care, the lack of mental health care, particularly, and lack of insurance, health insurance, and employment. The whole move of the community out to Gresham in that area suggests to me that things hasn't improved. It might have looked like they improved on the surface, but when we go underneath and we look at the gang violence and the amount of people who are killed in our community and of African-American persuasion, it's hard to judge. I don't want to say there hasn't been improvement, but, you know, these budgetary times, we have a new mayor who's cutting the budgets to youth task forces and other things that help the community deal with some of the social problems. It's hard to gauge that.
When we talk about all of these financial cuts and the budget woes and all the rest of that, does that mean that the community at large, everybody, mm-hmm. does that mean that we have to become more self-reliant in how we change our lives, improve our lives?
You've just described the description of it takes a village. You know, the philosophy of it takes a village. Yes, you know, we have to all come in and we have to all get involved. As you know, there's a big disparity between the haves and the have-nots, and sometimes it appears to be getting larger. You have people making millions and paying very little taxes and
seems to be a great disparity.
Yeah, it seems to be a great disparity, and those that in politics, in the political arena, who sort of sabotage any efforts to rein in guns, a whole host of issues.
Okay, let's talk about right here at KBOO and the black programming on the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you and I touched on this in another conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that we are hitting the largest portion of the black audience that might be listening out there in the Portland area, or are we missing the boat somewhere?
I think we're missing the boat. We've lost a great deal of our audience, the black audience, I feel, when we changed the programming formats and to take off rhythm and blues and soul primarily. I think we kind of missing the boat in a lot of respects, because KBOO was known for, I don't want to say black music because it's not a black radio station, but we had a significant portion of the African-American community listening. And when we changed the format and took soul out, as well as not only African-Americans, but others that loved that music and loved the access that KBOO gave the music and the positioning that KBOO did with that music. So I think we have lost a significant portion of our listenership.
Okay. Now, I want you to think back again to 1980 when you walked in the door and you saw this eclectic mixture of people that were coming together to build community. Did you believe that you would still be hanging around in 2013?
When I can answer that in maybe just one word, yes. When I came to KBOO, and at the time, our spiritual community, my spiritual community, my religious community, the Muslim community, were really putting an emphasis on community, you know, that we have to join the community and we have to accept our responsibilities as citizens of this country to make it better, to do the things that we can, because that really is what propagates the religion. That is really what people, that's the behavior that people really kind of should associate with Islam. So when I heard KBOO as community radio, it just did something for me, and seeing the diversity here, you know, that other radio stations in Portland just doesn't have.
So as we wind up the final few minutes of this portion of the show,
mm-hmm.
tell me how KBOO has impacted your life.
Well, I was on KBOO one Saturday. I was doing a program, and the professor from University of Portland called me on the air and asked me while I was on the air, and he asked me if I would come up to the University of Portland and be their radio general manager of the campus radio station and for credits and revenue. So, of course, I accepted that position gladly, and I went to the University of Portland and graduated in communication, and that was largely due to KBOO and a man named George Page. So KBOO has made a significant contribution in my life.
It's funny you should mention George Page, because after this time out, we're going to come back and we're going to start talking about George and his influence and his exposure to not only the black community in Portland, but to all of our wide listenership around the Northwest. So, Shahid, I want to thank you for sharing this time with us, and we want to thank you for your years of effort and hard work and your ability to just jump in there and get things done. So,
thank you for having me.
All right.
Black History is produced by Forrest Jenkins and is a public affairs presentation of KBOO.
Hello, I'm Eugene Rashad, news director for KBOO Radio. As you know, on February 24th, 1991 of this year, longtime volunteer George Page died from a heart attack. It was a tremendous loss to us for a number of reasons. I know that many of you can cite your own. But through the magic of audio recordings provided by the KBOO Archives, I found an interview George Page conducted with a lawyer, Art Delworth, on September 7th of 1977. George and Art covered a variety of topics, which included discrimination, politics, and life for blacks and minorities in a race-conscious society. I'm so pleased to present some highlights from excerpts of this timely talk between George and attorney Art Delworth. These precious moments we are about to spend with George prove to us again that George Page was unmistakably a masterful interviewer, keenly aware and attuned to the times. That special friend everyone deserves to have at least once in a lifetime. Here's George Page and Art Delworth speaking at what is now the King Facility Center on September 7th of 1977.
Life is haunting, dreams were haunting till you came by. Made my day so nice and bright.
He's a frustrated attorney, and that's the way I'll leave his title at this point. He's here at the Highland Community Center. He's in charge of projects, programs at Highland Community Center. The program is Black History. My name is George Page.
So until we get to that economic level, George, where we can deal with the white man economically on his level, then I think we're going to have the problems.
How many years are we talking about, though? We're looking. I see in the North a great regression of black youth who are not interested in school, who are extremely apathetic toward the society, have no desire to do anything, just sit and live, and at best, in many cases, sell drugs. So that's kind of a regression from the 60s. Here we are at the last part of the 20th century, the last part of the 70s, and this has been going on for about the last 4 or 5 years. You can go to many high schools all across the northern part of the country and see this, whereas in the South, there is still a get-it-together movement. Why the difference between the two halves of the country?
Well, there's an extreme difference, as you say. In the North, what are the problems? Let's go back a little bit and talk about in the 50s again and the 60s. If you remember when Dr. King came on the scene, he began to organize the people, the Rap Browns and Stokely Carmichael.
Well, didn't they operate independent of Martin Luther King?
They did, but we needed them. They still dealt with that segment of the population that Dr. King could not reach. Okay, all of these people began to mass together. In becoming involved in this movement was also some of the white structure, for whatever their reasons were, they became involved in this. Let's look at our government. The government says, well, how are we going to control all of these people? You know, they have now begun to create this big mass of people that can to some degree, with the voting power that they have, take over this government, in a sense, and bring about this justice that have been denied the black people. So in order to deal with that, they came up with this matter of inflation, creating inflation and high unemployment.
Do you think that was definitely created to hold down the movement?
Well, if it wasn't created, then I think they missed their calling as a government, because that's how you can control a mass of people.
Explain a little bit.
Well, if you remember the Vietnam and the when black people and white people began to merge and begin to question the attitudes of the congressmen and legislation that they were passing, our involvement in a war, an undeclared war, and things like this. If you were a government, I'm sure you'd say, well, how can I control all of these people? You know, there is a problem here. We're losing the grip on what we have going here in this country. I think we've got to deal with it. So what they did, again, they created inflation by raising prices, allowing steel companies to raise prices indiscriminately, by allowing the automobile manufacturers to price things out of proportion, to allow the oil companies to create a great need, because we are an industrialized nation, and as such, we need this oil and gasoline to move around, and et cetera. So they created all of this, and they said, now, how are we going to deal with that? So they created unemployment, high prices on unemployment. You can't get 20 people to get on a picket line anymore and protest the government, because somebody has to go to work to protect their job. And that's the way it is, George. It's harsh and it's cruel to be this way, but who suffers the most in this? And that's the poor. And in our case, it's the poor blacks. When we protest, you know, when the EEO amendment, the 1964 Civil Rights Act came into being, it's a fine bill, but it doesn't have any clout. It doesn't have any power behind it. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission doesn't have any power to deal with it. It's still left up to the courts. We know the company is guilty of discrimination. We know this. And we know that they're not promoting you or hiring you because you are black or because you are a minority. So what is happening is that we don't have the money to prosecute where the companies have the money. They have a whole staff of corporate attorneys on duty just to do nothing but defend them against you. They have unlimited funds to do this with. So consequently, the black man loses out. So the law is meaningless, because the law does not protect the man who tries to get a job at a company that is denied because he's black. I've worked in industry. I've seen industry tell black people, no, we can't hire you because you don't have the qualifications. But the qualifications are based, George, not upon what is needed to do the job. The qualifications change from person to person, depending on who's applying for the position. So when we talk about the black man in the law, you know, I question whether or not there is any, whether the black man is ever going to get his justice in this country. And I'm not talking as a communist, I'm not a communist, or radical, or anything. I'm a black man who went through the rod. In practicing law, I became discouraged with it, and I was upset with it, and I said, the heck with it, I'm just going to go back into business and do something else. I can have more of an impact upon a black community this way.
Well, I like you because you treated me so fine, I just couldn't.
We're going to get back to the interview George was having with Art Delwood in just a few minutes, but what I'm going to do now is introduce you to another Page, Gianna Page, daughter of the late George Page, and she literally grew up in the KABU Hall. So, Gianna, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thank you for having me.
You know, one of the first questions that I want to ask you, and I know I've heard from other folk as well, and that is, how did your dad get the name Master Blaster?
You know what? I think it was one of his friends, one of his best friends, named Herm Gilliam. And he used to call him that, and it just stuck with him. And then I started calling him that at 3, but I would actually say Master Blaster. So I couldn't get that T, you know, straight out there. And he kept it.
That's funny. Now, you were telling me off air that you were actually coming into the station at 6 months of age, right?
Yes.
And
it was on his Sunday show, my first time, and Dad used to tell me I would sit on his lap and play with the buttons and try to grab the microphone, and I just grew up there. I mean, I can't remember everybody, but I do remember being passed around
a lot. Now, let me ask you this. When you were old enough to realize that you were in a radio station, what was your first impression?
Wow. Amazing. My dad is on the radio. My dad is talking to millions and millions of people every Sunday, and they love him. I mean, it's jazz and blues, and there's actually teenagers, and, you know, at my time, my generation, who listened to my dad. I mean, who listens to jazz and blues at 15?
Right. Well, I did, but I'm different. So.
I did. But my friends, they didn't, and they actually tuned in to my dad every Sunday. My friends would actually come down there with me, and they were just amazed. And it just got all over school, got all over middle school. Hey, you know, Gianna's dad works at KBOO. What? Yeah. He's on the radio on Sundays. You got to listen. I mean, come on. We're in middle school.
And now,
I love it.
Now, about what year was this?
Let's see.
Well, from what time span? From the time that you were 6 months old to about what age?
Oh, gosh. I would say all the way up to, I continued listening all the way up to 18.
Okay.
And went to college, fell away a little bit. And then started actually a few months ago.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah, so when I say I grew up, I literally grew up. It was an every Sunday thing with us, sometimes even Saturdays.
Now, your dad did a program called Black History, too, where, as a matter of fact, this is the program that we're airing while we're doing this interview, too. He seemed to have his fingers in a lot of different pots. Did he talk about that a lot away from the radio station to kind of give you insights of how he felt and what he was thinking?
Yeah, especially with me being the baby and his daughter, he made sure I stayed grounded. He also made sure that I had a variety being a biracial child. So I had a variety of music, heritage, everything. And every Saturday, he would fix breakfast for us. And we had speakers on the corners in our living room and in the kitchen. And I would literally wake up to B.B. King. I would go to bed with B.B. King.
Oh, my.
He taught me broadcasting, video cameras. Everything that he did, I have a little bit of.
Sure.
Like, it's crazy because my son, William, he never met my dad, but he wants to be a game designer, and he loves technology. He loves video cameras. He loves, you know, anything that has to do with technology like my dad.
Sure. Let me ask you.
It's crazy how much he's like him.
Let me ask you this. Your dad was at a community radio station, and he didn't get paid for it. None of the volunteers get paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
Did he ever talk to you about the sense of being involved in community like that? And
yes.
What kind of feelings did he leave with you?
He always told me to give back. Even if it's a little, always do something to help your community, help anybody you possibly can. So since I don't live in Portland anymore, there are things that I do out here in Vegas. There's not a lot, but there's stuff I do here, and I definitely install that in my kids to always give back. And one of the big things is, you know, if I was there, the first thing would be that radio station. If I could do anything to help that radio station, I am just a phone call or a heartbeat away.
Well, that's absolutely wonderful to hear. And should you ever come back to Portland, you'd certainly be welcome here at KBOO. Do you have some sort of a funny anecdote of some kind in relationship to your dad being on air and you being in the station, something that you might like to share with us as we get ready to close?
The last thing I remember, I was 16, and me and my friend Cindy and Vicky went down there, and you know how there's that phone that's by the front door and you got to pick up the phone for them to buzz you in.
Right.
And my dad buzzed me in because I always wanted to go down there and ask for money. That's like the main thing. And he put me, Cindy, and Vicky on the air, me asking my dad for money. So everybody could hear the reason why I was coming down there was to ask daddy for money.
That never ends, let me tell you, Gianna.
No, it doesn't. But after that, every person I saw said, did you ask your dad for money today? In school, did you get any money from your dad? They all heard it. And, you know, he made jokes of it on other days. And it's just, it's hilarious. And I miss him so much because I wish my kids could see how much of a great guy he is and all the stuff that he did do for Portland. I mean, everybody knows who my father is. And even at his memorial, we actually had to turn people away because it was standing room. It was so crowded. And it was actually more of a party than a funeral.
Well, one of the things...
that's the one thing I have to say I love everybody in Portland for doing, because they came and rocked out to my dad's funeral. And it was just amazing to see how much love he has and actually still has. I mean, I can, you know, mention my dad today, and everybody knows who he is. And they always say, oh, yep, that's the mighty Master Blaster.
Well, one of the things that you've done, Gianna, is you've helped to continue as we create this oral history of folks who have been a part of KBOO for the last 45 years. Wow. I appreciate so much your taking the time to share these thoughts with us, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you so much. I am so glad to do this.
Thank you, Gianna.
Thank you.
Now we're going to get back to the rest of that interview that George was having with Art Dilwood.
Would you say that the unity in the North is lacking compared to that in the South?
Yes, it is. It's lacking because I think we have been lulled into a euphoric state by believing that the North has never discriminated against the black man, in which the North has been the greatest discriminator against the black man.
Well, in the last 10 years, the North has become extremely overt, whereas the South has not. All types of incidents, but I think the North is probably the biggest purveyor of the subtle discrimination of any other place in the world. I think the northern half of the United States probably has a master's and a doctorate in subtlety way above any place else in the world. How does the average black person fight that? Subtlety, I think, is the worst form of discrimination.
It's very difficult to fight it, George, but there is a method you can use for fighting it, to fight it. And that is, if you really get into to the political aspects of it, if you really put the pressure on the legislatures, on the local government, because they're not going to act unless black people get together. You know, they know that we're divided. And so therefore, we have a weak voice. We have to fight, we pay our taxes, and we live, if we pay the same amount of taxes as anyone else do, we work as hard as anyone else do, and we have a right to expect the same kind of treatment as anyone else.
I hope these few moments have provided some insight and impetus to take action or become more assertive on all fronts within the struggle being waged by blacks, minorities, women, and the disadvantaged to work together. George Page was a fighter. Hey, hey, thanks for your attention. And here's George.
Black History is produced by Forrest Jenkins and is a public affairs presentation of KBOO.
In addition to his hosting Black History, he also did a music program, which you may be more familiar with. Tell us a little bit about that program.
I believe it was a program called Jazz Rap. And just the fact that a lot of times you've asked me why I do what I do. Well, George did the same thing. And that's where I really kind of got my wings from, when he did the music and then he did the interviews and public affairs and so forth. Yeah, George did jazz rap, and then he also did a blues program following jazz rap every other Saturday. And he was on for, what, 6 hours? 6 hours every
wow,
other Saturday.
Wow, that's a long air
shift.
That's
a long air shift to keep people engaged as yeah. well. And he did it.
tell us about some of the things, if you can recall, that he did to help keep that audience listening to him for 6 hours.
Well, he just knew the music.
It costs me a lot, but there's one thing that I've got. It's my man. It's my man. Cold or wet, tired you bet. All of this I'll soon forget with my man. He's not much on looks. He's no hero out of books, but I love him. Yes, I love him. Two or three girls has he that he likes as well as me. But I love him. I don't know why I should. He isn't true. He beats me too. What can I do? Oh, my man, I love him so. He'll never know. All my life is just despair. But I don't care. When he takes me in his arms, the world is bright. All right. What's the difference if I say I'll go away when I know I'll come back on my knees someday? For whatever my man is, I'm his forevermore.
And, you know, Portland is a great blues town. It's a great jazz town, I truly believe. And George just kind of nurtured, that. And he did the music with such a flair and a knowledge of the music, and that people just gravitated toward listening to George and staying with George. I mean, Saturday was George's day on the radio, and it was Cable's day in the city. You know, I mean, he just kept you mesmerized to some degree with his knowledge of music, with his knowledge of jazz, with his knowledge of blues, and his own personal delivery.
At this time, was KBOO involved in the Blues Festival at all?
No, this was before the Blues Festival, actually.
Okay.
The Blues Festival came out of a lot of folks working at KBOO, and that's one of my pet peeves, that the Blues Festival should have came out of KBOO. We should have owned that more than we did, you know. But hindsight is 2020.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the people that George influenced besides yourself. Are any of them still at KBOO, and what were some of the things they did?
Well, I don't see too many of the folks. We got Eugene Rashad. He does the motif now on Saturdays here at KBOO. Myself, a lot of folks who are not of African American descent. He influenced them as well. Daniel Flesses, David. He does the jazz program here, Jazz in the Afternoon.
Now, I've got to tell you that the first time I heard George's name, and it was repeated several times, was back in February when I interviewed Sheila Rubin, who at one time was involved quite heavily with KBOO.
Right. She was a program director.
Right. And she was the one that first introduced me to the Master Blaster.
Okay. Well, George went out.
Especially when we were doing the pledge drives.
Well, George, he had a, first of all, he went to the, he spent time in the community. He recruited folks from the community to come down and to get involved in KBOO. Indian World, the program that he, John Talley, he influenced him and brought him in. He brought Muhammad Najib in for the Muslim program. He went J.W. Friday, he brought him in, went to the community and brought the, J.W. Friday, Ken and Kevin Berry. And
all these guys knew that they weren't going to get paid for coming and
right.
doing radio.
It was a volunteer situation, but we wanted to connect with our community because there was no African American soul programming, there was no rhythm and blues programming on radio at that time in Portland, and still isn't to a large degree, not on FM radio. You just don't have that connection. So George was very interested in bringing people from the community in to represent the community and represent the music, and not only represent the music, but represent different points of view. As I mentioned, when he brought Indian World, he brought Pablo I with roots rock reggae. He asked him to come down and develop a reggae show that was on for many years. And we, again, was the only radio station that really played reggae in Portland. That's another area I think we should have taken advantage of. And one of the things I wanted to try to take advantage of was have the reggae festival, develop a reggae festival. So like just like we do with the Boo Ball, we had a Boo Ball going on that we still have going on in terms of Halloween and bringing bands, local bands like Lloyd Jones, Struggle, Curry Salgado, and other local musicians, because we have a great reservoir of
it totally musicians. Amazes me the amount of talent that we have right here in Portland in the music community. I mean, you've mentioned Curtis several times. I've seen him perform a number of times the delays and the wealth of music that is here in the Portland
area.
Absolutely. Yeah. So he could cover a number of different bases. He could he could influence people not only through public affairs programming but through his music as well.
And the presentation of his music, you know, he had a presence that just kind of forced you to acknowledge him, to listen to him, and appreciate the work that he did.
Right. Well, Shahid, I want to thank you very much for you taking the time out of your busy schedule to come and talk to us and to share in this year-long project of Tune In, Turn On, Remember, 45 great years of KBOO Community Radio. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much.
As a reminder, if you have a story about KBOO that you want to share for this series, contact KBOO's station navigator at navigator@kboo.org or find out more at kboo.fm/stories. For Tune In, Turn On, Remember, 45 great years of KBOO Community Radio, I'm Dan Johnson.
KBOO Portland, the time is 7:03. Coming up next, Hard Knock Radio.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance. Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot Radio Show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to kboo.fm/silent dance parties.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility's Particles on the Wall, an exhibit of the story of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation and the human environmental tolls of the nuclear age. The exhibit is being held at the EcoTrust Building, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue in Portland. There is a reception on opening night, Friday, May 3rd, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. that is open to the public. The exhibit will show through June 14th. More information about this exhibit and opening night can be found online at the KBOO Community Radio Events page at kboo.fm.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another edition. It is Hard Knock Radio. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. On today's show, we continue.